For 20 years, there was no new treatment for children with Hunter syndrome. Today, there is, and the technology behind it could change medicine forever. Good morning. Welcome to Brightside Daily. I'm Rory, alongside Elizabeth.
And we've got four stories today that are genuinely worth your time. We're talking about a drug that does something doctors once said was impossible. Wolves and bison reclaiming Europe, over a million people counting birds, and a cancer breakthrough 40 years in the making.
Let's get into it. Imagine watching your child hit every milestone. First steps, first words, first day of school. And then, slowly, all of it starts to reverse. That's the reality for families living with Hunter syndrome. It's a rare genetic condition affecting roughly one in every 100,000 boys. Without treatment, it causes severe cognitive decline, organ damage, and dramatically shortened lives. And here's the thing that's made it so devastating. We've had enzyme replacement therapies for years. They help with some symptoms, but the brain has this protective shield called the blood-brain barrier. It keeps toxins out. The problem is, it keeps almost everything else out too. 98% of medicines can't get through. That changed this week. The FDA has approved Avlayah, the first biologic ever designed to cross the blood-brain barrier and treat Hunter syndrome directly in the brain. The first new treatment for this condition in nearly 20 years.
And the way it works is genuinely clever. The team at Denali Therapeutics built what they call a transport vehicle platform. It essentially hijacks the brain's own delivery systems to smuggle the therapy past its defenses.
Right. So the brain has these natural gateways it uses to bring in nutrients. This drug disguises itself as cargo the brain actually wants to let in.
And here's what makes this bigger than one rare disease. If this platform works for Hunter syndrome, the same approach could potentially deliver treatments for Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and dozens of other neurological conditions. We're talking about diseases that affect millions of people.
Now, important caveat, this is an accelerated approval based on biomarker data, not long-term outcomes. The full picture is still being studied, and the cost is likely to be significant, which raises real access questions.
But as a proof of concept, as Dr. Mark Davis at Stanford put it, the blood-brain barrier has been called the Mount Everest of drug delivery, and this team just planted a flag at the summit. 7,000. That's how many European bison are roaming free across the continent right now. In 2003, there were fewer than 1,800. Some conservationists thought they'd go extinct entirely. But across Europe, something remarkable is happening. Species that vanished decades or even centuries ago are coming back. Gray wolves have established packs in 23 countries. Eurasian lynx are stalking through forests from the Carpathians to the Scottish Highlands. And those bison? They're engineering entire ecosystems just by doing what bison do.
What do you mean by engineering ecosystems?
So bison create what ecologists call mosaic landscapes. They graze in patches, trample certain areas, leave others alone. That patchwork creates habitat diversity that supports hundreds of other species. Plants, insects, birds, small mammals. The wolves do something similar by controlling deer populations, which lets forests actually regenerate. And it's not just good for wildlife. Restored forests and wetlands sequester carbon and act as natural flood defenses. Marine protected areas in Europe are seeing fish populations bounce back 5 to 10 times within just 5 years.
I think what strikes me is the speed of it. We tend to think of environmental recovery as something that takes generations.
It can happen fast when you give nature the space. Now, there are real tensions. Livestock farmers and large carnivores are never going to be easy neighbors. Some reintroduction efforts have failed, but the overall trajectory is extraordinary.
7,000 bison. What happens when the rest of the continent catches up? 1.1 million people, 467,000 checklists, 8,257 bird species documented. That's 75% of every known bird species on the planet. all counted in 4 days. The 2026 Great Backyard Bird Count, coordinated by the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, the National Audubon Society, and Birds Canada, has absolutely smashed its previous participation records.
And what I love about this is the range of people involved. You've got seasoned ornithologists with 40 years of experience submitting data alongside someone who just downloaded a bird identification app on their phone for the first time. Both contributions matter equally to the science.
That's exactly what makes citizen science so powerful. No single research team could monitor bird populations across every continent simultaneously. But a million people with smartphones? That gives scientists a real-time snapshot of global biodiversity that no amount of funding could replicate.
There's a practical edge to it, too. Birds are indicator species. When bird populations shift, it tells scientists something fundamental is changing in the ecosystem. This data feeds directly into conservation decisions about where to focus protection efforts.
Now, there are geographic gaps. Participation skews toward places with strong internet access and established birding culture. And beginners do sometimes misidentify species, though the platform has validation systems for that.
But over a million people choosing to spend their weekend looking up instead of looking down at their phones and generating genuinely useful science while they're at it? That's a stat I'll take. For 40 years, cancer researchers have been trying to crack one of the hardest problems in oncology. There's a family of proteins called KRAS. When they mutate, they drive uncontrolled cell growth. And they're present in roughly 30% of all cancers, up to 90% of pancreatic cancers. The problem? KRAS proteins have smooth, featureless surfaces. Most cancer drugs work by fitting into structured pockets on a protein, like a key in a lock. KRAS doesn't have a lock. Scientists literally called it undruggable.
I remember reading that researchers tried to block the pathways around KRAS instead, since they couldn't hit it directly.
Right, and it worked to a degree, but with limited results and significant side effects. What's changed is a drug called zoldonrasib. It's the first investigational drug designed to target the KRAS G12D variant specifically. That variant drives about 14% of non-small cell lung cancers and shows up heavily in colorectal and pancreatic tumors too. And the FDA has just given it breakthrough therapy designation. The approach is different from anything that came before. Zoldonrasib acts as a covalent inhibitor. It essentially handcuffs the mutated protein, physically preventing it from sending growth signals. Early data suggests it can shrink tumors while leaving healthy cells alone.
And this isn't the first time the undruggable label has been wrong. A KRAS G12C inhibitor was approved back in 2021. So this is the second lock picked on a protein that supposedly had no locks.
It's preliminary. Resistance mechanisms could develop. The long-term safety profile is still unknown. But for the roughly 25,000 people diagnosed with KRAS G12D lung cancers every year in the US alone, this is the first time there's been a drug aimed directly at what's driving their disease.
40 years of trying, and all of it started because someone refused to accept the word undruggable. Time for our rapid fire round. Here are this week's numbers that matter.
The FDA has granted breakthrough therapy designation to a new CAR T cell therapy for T cell cancers. These are blood cancers that have resisted immunotherapy until now because the treatment cells and cancer cells are the same type. Early data suggests remission rates could match the 70 to 90% response rates seen in other blood cancers, potentially life-changing for thousands of patients a year.
Four critically endangered female gorillas have been successfully released into Virunga National Park in Congo. They were rescued as infants from wildlife traffickers and spent 4 years in rehabilitation. Virunga is home to about 30% of all mountain gorillas left on Earth. And over 200 rangers have given their lives protecting them since 1996.
In the Marshall Islands, sooty terns have re-established breeding colonies just 12 months after invasive rats were removed from their nesting sites. 12 months, Pacific Islands have lost up to 90% of their native seabird species to invasive mammals. And this project shows that targeted intervention can trigger rapid ecosystem recovery.
A new OECD data shows global philanthropic aid is significantly larger than anyone realized. They're now tracking 506 charitable organizations contributing to international development, up from fewer than 200 previously counted. Private giving is becoming a major force in global aid, often moving faster and taking bigger risks than traditional government channels. That's your Brightside Daily for Thursday.
If any of those stories gave you something to feel good about, share this episode with someone who might need it, especially that Ablaya story. There are families out there who've been waiting 20 years for that news.
And if you want the full stories with all the links and sources, head to thebrightside.news. Everything we cover is there in detail.
Tomorrow we've got a story about a community solar project that's cutting energy bills by 40% in one of the poorest districts in the country. You won't want to miss it.
Until then, keep looking for the good stuff. It's out there.
See you tomorrow.